some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, December 21st, 2010. I'm Jimmy Carboni, joined with my co-host, Ray Dieter. And tonight we have a special show called Beer Travels. How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing good, Jimmy. I'm doing really good. I've been enjoying all these holiday beers. There's some great stuff out there.
We've had some really good ones, too.
Yeah.
In fact, right now we're drinking the Sierra Nevada. The 30th? We've got Hagen Blunt here from I Taste Your Beer.
Yep, 30th anniversary. I don't know. It said something Bach.
Something Bach. Like Johann
India
Sebastian
something
Bach.
And we have Kim Ryman from Grape Hop Tours. It's very nice to meet you, Kim. You have some interesting things going on.
It's nice to meet you guys, too. Yeah, we're excited about running some tours to Italy, tasting All right. the craft
beer. So we're gonna have a really good conversation today. We'll be joined later by some interesting guests, a brewer from New Zealand, Tuatara Brewery, and BR Roya, one of our favorite guests, return guests from Shelton Brothers. Give out a shout to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com, one of the best sites on the internet to learn more about beer, and our supporter, GoodBeerSeal.com, an association of 27 New York City beer bars, GoodBeerSeal.com. You know, in the last year, we've done almost 50 shows so far, and one thing that always comes up are the towns and regions that we'd like to travel to. And we haven't gotten a sponsor yet to send us to these places, but we can definitely dream. And Ray, what are some of the places that you'd really like to go with the show and the experience beer culture?
Well, you know, I would love to go to Montreal. I mean, there's some great beer up there, up in Canada, and there's such great beer being brewed in America now. I mean, some of the greatest stuff in the world is coming out of the States these days. I'd love to go down to San Diego. We had talked about that. We had a little pipe dream about going to San Diego. I think we should follow up on that. Lagunitas might want to step up and talk to us about that. But the other places, I mean, I've been to Bamberg a bunch of times. I love it out there. I never get tired of Bamberg. There's just great beer out there. Brussels, you know, anywhere in Belgium, Antwerp, Liège. Have you been to Belgium, Jimmy?
Well, I haven't never really been on a beer tour, and that's why it's exciting to have Kim here from Grape Hop Tours. Kim, tell us a little bit about what you do and how you got into giving tours and organizing tours.
I started by running a travel website for the past few years, and a couple of years ago, a friend of mine saw an article in the New York Times by Evan Rail about the Italian beer craft movement.
Right.
And she decided that this was something she wanted to do. She wanted to run tours to Italy and among other places. And I said to her, do you want some help? And she said, sure. And that's how we got started. So we've been over there a couple of times. We've met with the different brewers. It's a great place. They're really excited about this movement. It's really young. The first breweries popped up about 1996. The small ones we're talking, the craft brewers. And
what's your website?
It's grapehops.com. So grape as in wine, because we also do wine tours, and hops as in beer, all one word.
And people don't really identify Italy as a place for good beer, do
no,
they?
No, they don't, and it's really crazy. I like to, one thing I say is it's beer for wine lovers, so if you're not someone who's necessarily a beer person, this isn't your Anheuser-Busch, this isn't your light beer. These beers have body, they have
That's
flavor.
Always a hard sell, isn't it? Like, people that are diehard wine fans, it's like, no, this is not Budweiser. Not that Budweiser's horrible, but it is. And it's not. This is not Coors Light, this is not Blue Moon. This is really great, well-made beer that goes well with food.
Exactly.
And it's not like a, you know, wine versus beer concept. That always annoys me, that kind of confrontational thing. They both are really good with different dishes.
Absolutely. And it's funny because that's one thing that's different in the culture there, that the brewmasters will go out and have wine at night with their buddies down the road that are making wine, especially in the region
Sure.
we go to in Piemonte, which is famous for their wine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost a more of a symbiotic relationship than a competition.
Yeah, especially my bar in New Orleans. We had a huge configuration of chefs from New Orleans, and I mean, arguably New Orleans might be one of the best culinary cities in America. And these, you know, they said we were crazy trying to open up a good beer bar in New Orleans. And I was like, wait, these great restaurants, you know, people like this stuff. And we opened up and people started showing up, and there's all these chefs were there, you know, drinking. They weren't drinking wine. They were drinking beer.
Absolutely.
And a couple of shots of the odd, you know, single malt or good bourbon.
That's one of the great things they're doing over in Italy, too, is they're cooking with the beer. They're highlighting it. They're pairing it well. And it's something that we're starting to see now in our country, too. But they've been doing it for a while there, and the food's just absolutely delicious. Mm. And it goes well with the beer they're producing.
Do you think that fits in with the whole slow food movement that started in Italy?
Yeah, absolutely. It mm-hmm. definitely came out of that slow food movement because they're using, as much as they can, the hops aren't local, but they're using local ingredients. It's right. definitely an artisanal process to them. They're not into the mass production.
Is there a big history of brewing in Italy, or is that a relatively new thing?
Not on the craft breweries. The craft breweries, the first ones came up in 96. Birrificio Lombardi, which we can't get in this country, produces in Milan. They started in 96. I believe Teo Musso started Balladin about 96 also.
Right.
But other than, you know, Baretti and the others,
right,
they
right.
were older. But these craft brewers are
okay,
are
so why are the
new.
Beers coming out of Italy, the craft beers coming out of Italy, so expensive? They really are crazy
really
expensive.
They're crazy expensive, which is another reason, by the way, why I like going, because they're not as expensive over there. I mean, other than the hit you're going to take, if depending on the exchange rate, they're much less expensive, especially when you're buying them directly from the brewers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got your importing costs. You've got the euro conversion. You've
right.
got your extra taxes because they're
well, that taxation, that's what I was
importing.
Thinking it is. Like, I'm sure the Italian taxation for export is crazy.
Right.
But gelato is expensive, too.
Do they export gelato? Can you? You know, I don't even know about that. Can you buy gelato from Italy here?
Yeah, yeah. Grom sells all their stuff. Is all like organic right, Italy. But it's down in the West Village.
Right.
Yeah,
they've got a few.
But there's a couple interesting. I mean, there's definitely some interesting brewers. What beers did you bring with you tonight?
I brought Demon Hunter from Montegioca, which is in Piemonte, in Piedmont, and Strada San Felice, which is in Chieri, also in Piedmont, and Balladin, which is arguably one of the first in the movement, if not the first. They're Noel. I thought appropriate. It's their Christmas. Their winter
is there
beer.
Anything that like if I'm going on one of your tours? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you're trying to get people to go on a tour, coordination with the Beer Tables anniversary. Is there something coming up?
Yeah, Beer Tables is celebrating their third anniversary this March, and so we've put together a custom tour just for their clientele that we're offering at the end of March, from the 20th to the 27th, I believe those dates are.
But you're saying that people aren't as interested in it because it's Italian beer?
Well, I'm not sure about what's going on with there. I'm not sure if that's more of an economy hit than anything else at this time. Mm. But in general, it just feels like anytime we approach people with Italian beers, they're all like, Italian beer? I know Italian wine, but not Italian beer. And so we're trying to expose people.
It's kind
more.
Of a hard sell.
It is a hard sell because it is expensive in this country. And it's, you know, I'm not going to go into my beer store and pay $20 for a bottle of beer, basically, in some cases. But you got to remember, one, it's a wine bottle, so it's a bigger bottle. It's not your,
right.
you know, it's bigger than a bomber even. And two, it's artisanal. It's you've got to think of it as a special treat situation. But three, if you're looking to go to Italy, you're looking to experience the food, and you want to try the beer.
Oh,
we have a really well-traveled beer person here, B.R. Arroyo from Shelton Brothers. B.R., what do you think's going on in Italy? I mean, is there a way you can put your thumb on it and say there's certain quirky dudes just making beer? What's going on there?
I mean, we have one brewery from Italy right now, which is the brewery Peniel. And
good stuff.
Yeah, very interestingly enough, the beer that we bring in, it's a Belgian sour red. So they do a very wonderful style, better than some of the Belgians are doing with their sour red. I find it's for the brewing scene in Italy, it's like also in its infancy. So not only are you getting very expensive bottles, there are some breweries where, I mean, I think the tastes are so far. What they put in their beer can be a lot, very, very challenging. So for people to say, like, ooh, I want to try an Italian beer. I know, you know, Moretti, or I want to try this other one, but it's so expensive. And then it comes out, you know, it's got the chestnut, some of them, the spices, many different ingredients. I think both just being a new business there as or, you know, a new idea there when people know it for wine, as well as also having in some cases, challenging flavors.
Are chestnuts? You said chestnuts. Is that a major Italian adjunct or ingredient or a spice? Because I know in France, what was the beer that uses chestnuts?
That would be Pietro.
Right, 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 right. I forgot. But is there any other beers that use chestnuts?
There are other French beers that use chestnuts. I've had Italian beers that use chestnuts, and
but some of the Italian beers are fabulous. I mean, some of these are there's Via Emilia. There's some ones that really stand out. Here's a beer trivia question about Italian beers, and let's see who knows. What's the brewery in Italy that is making beer in a prison? Does anyone know that beer? Nobody knows that beer.
No.
It's also one of the most expensive, which I can't quite get because they have free labor.
But wait, no. Yeah. It's not Baladin, is it?
No.
Who is it?
It's Pausa Cafe.
It is Pausa. That's,
if you
ever have
Pausa Cafe, it's,
is it a prison or is it a work like a work reform program?
So it's made by ex-junkies.
I actually have one of their beers here somewhere. Their pills. Their Pilsner.
But they're one of the. I mean, they're really great, but they're really expensive. I mean, it's.
But not there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not there. I think I bought their Tipa, which you can't get here, and I want to say I paid about €5 or €6 for it, which is at the time was about $7. So not that much.
So Hagen's doing. Hagen Blunt is. I taste your beer. You launched a really interesting website. And what are you doing every day? You're featuring a different beer.
Yeah, I guess it's a segue to the whole beer travel thing. Yeah, a lot of times. You can't get the beer from a lot of these smaller independent breweries out there. And a lot of them don't have the distribution network or the marketing to get the word out about their beers. And more these days, the interest from the consumer is what brings the beer to your local beer store. So if you start asking about, I need some Cigar City this, or I need some Green Flash that, you're going to see more of that in these local and small beer stores. But you're not going to see that until people know about them and start experiencing them for themselves. So
and so what are you doing? You're basically selling each day to a brewer?
Yeah, each day is a professionally produced video, and I'm doing photography, a blog post. I'm going to be their brand ambassador for the day. The one thing is that they're buying an ad, but to make sure that the reader wants to come back, there's no recommendation or referral conferred. It's just the information. And it's just well done. I'm not going to make your beer
look
sexy. What's
the site called again?
It's called itasteyourbeer.com.
Itasteyourbeer.com.
Yeah, and I mean, it looks pretty good. Yeah,
it looks pretty good. So we're going to take a short break. Sorry, guys. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back with a brewer from New Zealand. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We have a special message about Heritage Radio Network. Each week, Heritage Radio Network brings you over 20 shows featuring some of the most innovative voices in sustainable culture today. From Cooking Issues with Dave Arnold to We Dig Plants to our own Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network shows are made possible by our generous sponsors and from listeners like you. Go to our website and you can donate as well at heritageradionetwork.com. Back on Beer Sessions Radio, sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. And we've got some really cool guests, including all the way from New Zealand, Will Cass, who's not the brewer, but he's like the specialist brand rep.
The business brewer.
Tuatara brewery.
Do we have some of that beer to drink, Jimmy?
We yeah. sure do.
Did you bring it?
Can yep. we pop some open and put it in a glass and so share it?
This is a good. This is our good friend Dan Shelton from Shelton Brothers has been out there in the world. You know, Belgium and you know Germany, England, and now he's in New Zealand. We had a little a vegetarian beer dinner with Dan last spring at Jimmy's Number 43 because he's a vegetarian, and he proudly tasted us on Tour Tar. He was like, Tour Tar is my favorite pilsner, and I don't think that other than from Germany has Shelton Brothers ever had a pilsner before BR.
I'm sure we have. I'm just trying to run down the portfolio in my head really quickly. Yeah, no, we've had some from Scandinavia. We've had other pilsners.
You've had some pills?
Yeah.
But it's not like a pills-heavy portfolio. Yeah.
Not particularly, no. But no. It's not because we don't like pills. We love pills.
You hate pills. I know.
I was out at dinner the other night with a friend, and she said, you know, gosh, I'll drink anything except for a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc because it tastes like grapefruit. And it's like it was the distinctive flavors behind the Sauvignon Blanc. Ray, what did you have to say about New Zealand?
Well, you know, I had a good friend who went to New Zealand, and I have nothing to say about New Zealand except that I heard that there's a huge home brewing culture going on down there because there's not a lot of places to go buy beer.
They don't have stores?
They don't have stores, and people live out in the... in the wilderness.
They don't have stores.
Basically, it's all cavemen down there, right?
Yeah, and we're wearing grass skirts.
So is that true? Is there a lot of home brewing going on?
There's a lot of home brewing going on down there, but it's because we've been living under the fist of a duopoly, two big brewers putting out mainstream beers, no variety, no flavor.
Oh, right.
And Tua Tara was proud to be at the crest or the forefront of the revolution, which is now going on down there. We started in about 2000. And 2009, we were crowned champion brewery of New Zealand, so we're pretty proud of
that. Congratulations.
So what are the main breweries in New Zealand? I've never had New Zealand beer.
Well, it's dominated by two large corporates, which are owned by foreign global conglomerates, which aren't really worthy of mention. But there are some great, great breweries down there, and amongst Tua Tara. We've got other great beer buddies like Moa and Epic. And they're all doing very well down there. But the mainstream beers, our bud equivalents, are, all coming in. We've got all locally brewed versions of Heineken and Amstel and the locally versions.
Okay, so New Zealand, if you're drinking Heineken, where is that beer brewed? Is the Heineken recipe brewed in New Zealand?
Yeah, it is under contract, yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so it's not about not having access to a grocery store to buy beer. It's more about the beer that is available sucks.
That's right, and that's why Tua Tara got started. So Carl was been brewing, ever since his mother caught him making cider when he was 13 in the bedroom cupboard. But Carl was owned a brew pub, and, there was some craft brew coming through, but there was still a lacking in consistency and quality. And so we partnered up with the two most successful independent thinking bars in Wellington, the capital city, and with them as a guaranteed take, developed Tua Tara to achieve a representation of six global beer styles brewed true to style. So all our yeast, single source yeast from state of origin, we really set out to achieve a quality and consistency in craft brewing, which at the time was quite rare.
What's your production? How much do you make? How much beer do you make?
Well, we currently brew around 1 million liters, which I think, banging on my conversions, about 1,024 barrels per annum. And we're just doubling the brew length right now.
And did you draft as well as bottles?
Yeah, so I think it's around 30% of our sales is draft.
Okay. And, are you going to be bringing the draft into the United States?
Well, yeah. The summer of Tua Tara is coming, you guys. Watch out.
Summer of Tua Tara.
But, Will, if you guys are so small, why are you guys selling to America?
Well, we like coming out here and partying with you guys. What more reason do we need? No, we see an established market, and we see real growth potential out here. And, we're making a great product. We want to share. And there's no much more reason than
that. It's all about sharing.
It's all about the sharing.
You're not here about money. You're not here about success. It's about sharing. That is so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
right. Hagen, you want to ask? Hagen's great. You know, Hagen Blunt is not only the itasteyourbeer.com, he writes for quite a few outlets, including Huffington Post. So I feel lucky to have a great journalist on with us tonight. So go ahead, Hagen. It's your interview. You're the cool guy.
My one question would be, what makes you like really excited about beer as opposed to some other random thing? Why beer?
Well, I think it's beer. You know, it's a foundation. It's a foundation of life in many respects. You know, for years and right back through the history of time, beer is what's been bringing people together, and it's started out in a mystical way. And you know, as a community, everyone gets together and supports one another as craft brewers and as quality craft brewers. And so, you know, it's a fun thing. When I set out to look at what to do, I had two criteria. One is that it had to be fast growing, and the other one was it had to be fun. And hey, beer fits both those boxes.
Did you brew yourself before you started? Did you do homebrew?
Just a little bit of dabbling.
Yeah,
yeah, but yeah. No, not.
Yeah, me too. Just a little bit, you know, with friends and
enough to stink up the house a bit.
Let me give Ray's been dying to ask you this. You're being imported by Sheldon Brothers. Ray and Dan Sheldon go way back, so
we do.
He's going to ask you a question about.
So how did Dan find you? What rock did he turn over? And
yeah, well, the Shelton brothers are renowned for getting out there and finding the great stuff. And I think we popped up on the radar when we were crowned champion brewer in New Zealand.
Of New Zealand.
Of New Zealand, 2008, 2009. And yeah, I think the communication got underway there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've always, like I said, tried to emulate great beer styles from around the world. So when we're looking at our IPA, for example, you know, we're out here looking at the best IPAs and then taking our views back. And I think the Shelton brothers recognized straight away something a little bit different coming from down under.
I saw you pour some of your beer. I don't think I got any.
Oh, you poor thing.
I know. I know.
What you got there is our Belgian strong ale.
Okay.
So we source the yeast from the Ardennes province in the south of Belgium there. Sort of runs into the north of France. And it's got a Motueka hop, which is a New Zealand hop, and it's got a lovely hop balance, and it's a very, very lovely beer. It's one of the three beers that Shelton's are bringing in at the moment.
I'm checking out the nose here. I'm inhaling gently
sale now in New York City?
Yes, they are. In fact, I've been going around a few bars just checking that, making sure that's true, and yes, they are. They're for sale.
So on your beer travels, Will, what are some places that you've enjoyed, you know, traveling to, where you've had a good experience of a local beer culture?
Well, I spent quite a bit of time up in London and started to really opened my eyes to cask ales and, you know, quality cask ales. So I've always enjoyed that area.
Is there a cask ale culture in New Zealand at all?
Sure. Unfortunately, the bar right underneath my office has got two handles.
Unfortunately.
So we do a lovely porter, which served on the hand pull downstairs.
It's all research. It's okay.
It's all research. But yeah, no, there's more and more bars opening up down there with putting a cask facilities in.
So it's getting bigger.
Mm. Oh yeah.
But there wasn't a cask tradition like historically.
No, like I say,
it was like crap lager.
10 years ago, it was a fairly dark place for beer.
Do you do a lot of test batches of, like, just random, here, let's just throw something in this beer and see what happens?
Yeah, well, Carl's test batch is around 8,000 litres. Yeah, but we don't do any what we call festive brewing, so we don't throw twigs in it and, you know, mosses and all that kind of stuff. We're all about beers true to style.
Do you use chestnuts?
No, we don't use chestnuts.
All right. And Kim, do you think you would organize a tour to New Zealand? I mean, this is what I want to know. Would you go to New Zealand to try the beer?
Absolutely.
Or should we just wait till it comes to America?
We were talking about this before the show started, that we've been looking for a place to do a winter trip to, and New Zealand is perfect because obviously it's summer there, and so now we definitely need to talk. And actually on the car ride out, I said it's one of the few places that I think, or it's as far as I probably would go for beer. So
okay, I got a question now. So you're booking a tour with beer tables with Justin's place over in Park Slope, one of the great beer bars in the world.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
We got to talk. Okay. I own some beer bars, too.
All right.
And
no,
I would love to
That'd be great. That would be great.
Well, you're about to have to take a little bit more than 6 days, though, on a New Zealand tour.
New Zealand is going to be like
we've
a two-weeker, at least.
We've got about 60 great breweries to get through, so we might need a few more days.
So it is worth traveling to. There's 60 really good breweries.
60 great breweries. And every year in August, we have a fantastic event in the capital city where we all come together and have great sessions.
There's 60 great breweries in New Zealand?
Yeah.
And we only get one of their beers?
Yeah, well, you know, we're always out there leading the
way. BR, can we fix that?
It's happening.
Wow.
Great.
All right. We got a question from one of our listeners. It's always the fun part for us. And everyone can join in answering. This is from Rob in Brooklyn. And Rob, thank you for writing in. I recently had dinner at Hearth and ordered a bottle of Jolly Pumpkin Oro de Calabaza for the table. It was awesome with the cappuccino. The Cocho, and kudos to Hearth for serving fine beer. My question is about the serving. I think cachucho is some type of cheese, but it may not be spelled right. And the server treated it like a bottle of wine, showed the label, poured a taste, etc. While we all want fine beer in fine restaurants, our table was split on the treatment. Do you feel beer should be served with the pretentiousness of wine, or is beer beer?
I've got a view on that, because we brew to style, I think serving to style is very important. So the correct glassware, the correct temperature, and the correct pour, very important.
Ray, I mean, you do a lot of tastings. You do Monday Liquids of Interest. You know, you're working with wine and beer and spirits.
Well, basically what I do is when I drink beer with dinner, I usually put it in a tall glass, really warm, and I drink it out of a straw. No, of course, it's you know, the presentation is really important. But, I mean, I don't think the word pretentious. I mean, I don't think serving wine properly is pretentious. It's serving wine properly.
I think what he might be saying is that he's at a finer dining restaurant.
And Hearth is great. I love that
where
restaurant.
Where the staff is trained in kind of a wine service, and they may just, you know, replicate that with beer. And I guess he might be saying that, gosh, I wish that some of these restaurants actually had a unique way of pouring their beers, like, you know, to style or something.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of restaurants may, and Hearth is not one of them, because I know they have a pretty respectable.
They have good beers.
They have great beer. And
they have two-hour wine bars. Where
yes,
they
do. I mean, they know what they're doing. And what's his name? Peter?
I don't know the guy's
name. The wine director there. He's really
great guy. And
I can't think of his name.
It's Paul.
Paul
from Hearth and Tiwar. He's been around a long time. He's really. He won a James Beard Award for wine service.
Their wine list is, you know, fantastic. Their beer list is also really great. And I live right on the corner from the place. Like, I'm there often. I sit at the bar and have a glass of wine or a glass of beer and some appetizers.
I think that's one of the first things I learned when we started visiting the breweries in Italy, was that the different beers were served in different glasses, and not only that, but at different points in the meal. There were certain beers that they considered aperitif, and there were certain beers that were served as dessert, and certain beers that were digestivo. The chestnut beer, for example, was a dessert beer, and it was served after the meal. It wasn't
a
beer
that
we drank.
Would they mix beer and wine at the same meal?
We did not, but Montegioco actually produces a beer that's brewed with a local grape, a local wine.
Mm-hmm. Phil Markowski does that. He brews beer and with wine. With grape.
Yeah, we've seen a lot more of that. We've seen it from Allagash. We've seen a lot of people,
Have you had experiences where the glass just completely made a big difference in the...
Always.
Yeah.
I'm a big glass freak.
Even if it was the same style of glass, but it was a different glass, maybe manufacturer, have you had that?
I think it's got to do with the nose more than it does
with
the actual flavor of the beer. I mean, if it's focusing the nose, you know,
into
your nose,
mm-hmm.
That makes a huge difference.
Yeah, cleaner.
Yeah, but once again, I think beer is like, you know, if you're thirsty and it's cold, it's really good. You know, you can't go too snooty about it, and that's why the pretentiousness question. That's why that question is like, I think it's really important. I think people wrestle with this. It's like, is beer, you know, are we trying to compare beer to wine? It's not. They're two different things.
You know who does it really well? Actually, Justin at Beer Table, he's got it set up where the service of the beer is elegant, but it's not pretentious, and it's definitely it's serving beer.
But he also does. I noticed when we had a smoked porter with him this summer. It was served in a very small, almost wine-like glass, as opposed to the tulip glass that others, or a pint glass, you know, depending on the beer. He's using different glasses.
I think beer served in, like, the balloon wine glass, I think that works really well. It, once again, it focuses the nose, and When I do my tastings, I use wine glasses, balloon wine glasses, like 10-ounce wine glasses. Fill up halfway. It works really well.
Yeah, generally the balloons for the ales and something with a slightly straighter side for the pilsners. And another thing that you often see when it comes to service is the great unwashed, if you like, the people who haven't gotten into craft or started discovering beer, want their glass full to the top. You know, what's this head on the top of this beer? You know, you're trying to rip me off. And it takes a while to get people
past
that.
That's very
English,
by the way.
Yeah. So, great pilsner should always be served with a nice, strong head.
You know,
on
it's funny,
top.
In Belgium, they don't mind that. They expect to have like a half inch
of
or
course.
So
yeah.
of some suds. Mm. And if you go to England, they want fish eyes.
Yeah.
So it's like just a few bubbles on the top. Look like fish eyes.
At Victory Brewing, I was actually listening to somebody talk about this last week, but they have a tap that you pull it forward and it pours beer. You push it back and it pours head.
Most taps do that.
Most taps do this?
Oh, yeah.
This is a... I don't know. For some reason, they said it was new.
It's not that unusual, no.
Yeah, no. Cool.
Most taps give good head.
All right. Ray, say that again.
I said that most taps give good head.
And we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni here with Ray Dieter tonight. And our sponsor is GreatBrewers.com. Thanks to them, a great place to learn about beer. One thing about GreatBrewers.com, they're also a distributor, but they have a lot of things going on. They have a part of the site about beer education. There's a history. There's a test called Great Brewers Test 20 and Great Brewers Test 100, which I took and I got a 72 on.
Jimmy, you've got to work on that, dude.
Yeah. And but
the sommelier thing is very good too.
Yeah, it's a pairing of food and beer, but it's a really good site. I you forget sometimes how little you know about beer, and I like going to greatbrewers.com. We have another email question from someone in wine. All the wine people now are starting to get interested in our show. This is from a friend. She's an assistant wine buyer at Sherry Lehman, which is a huge Manhattan wine company.
I love that place.
Really busy for the holidays. Her name's Dawn Land. She says, if Hope Rion is one of the gems of Bordeaux, how would you pick a beer that you would classify in the same way? You know, relative to the beer and its place of origin. We all, you know, for a long time we've identified Bordeaux as the greatest wines, and people collect them, and you know they have a price that's you know kept, you know, that where they track the prices of the futures like they do stocks almost.
Yeah.
You know, does beer have anything like this? When what's different about it? Will.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's a tough question.
It is a tough one.
Bigger,
yeah,
bigger
I was
issues.
Trying to get the top off this bottle of Pilsner as well, to be fair.
I'm so glad you did.
Not
well,
easy. I thought you gave it was talking
not easy using my teeth, you know.
That Pilsner is so good.
Well, okay, I'll tackle this one. It's like in wine, you know, they have the great growths, and in certain areas have, you know, we may have neglected, but they've, in the last 10 years, like Piedmont, you know, you've got these great Barolos, and, you know, there is this collectible element to wine, but wine also has an age-worthy quality that adds to that. But in terms of beer, you know, there's obviously, Belgium, you know, there's Trappist ales and... You know, is there any other beer that stands out in your mind that you would say this is like the, you know, the benchmark or, you know?
To me, no. I don't think there's certain beers that you can age, but most beer, and this is one of my pet peeves, I really would love to see date stamps on beers, because most beer is what we would consider a drink now.
Fresh is best.
Yes, exactly. Mm. In my mind right now, I mean, and it just could be us personally, we've been really into some of the California IPAs lately. And on a recent discovery was the Sculpin for us. So that's like our premier...
Ballast Point Sculpin.
Yeah, Ballast Point Sculpin's IPA. And that's our premier beer at the moment. You know, the one that we're going to pay a pretty penny for and we enjoy. But at any given time, there's so many great beers being produced in this country, anyone can take that center stage.
BR, you represent some of the best beers in the world with Shelton Brothers. If you had to put together, let's say you had to put together a list of first growth or first, you know, first production beer breweries, would you give us a short list, like pick your top five in the world?
Well, for brewery, I mean, that's tough. I mean, you definitely want to go with the traditional brewing countries like Belgium, Germany, England, which are all, you know, they started, I mean, I think there is a sense, it's not quite as the same as wine in terms of terroir, but most of these beers, the styles developed historically, traditionally, because of, for one reason, they were north of where you could grow grapes. So the barley was grown, the hops were grown. However, for example, say in Scotland, they started making Scotch ales, which are very malty, because hops were not able to grow so far north. So they use fewer hops. You know, water chemistry also contributes to, like, the porters that you get, the porters and stouts in Dublin, ales in England, even in terms of, you know, the southern hop-growing regions. So you get the Bohemian Pilsners, the Munich, Helles are going to be a little bit more hoppier. So I think traditionally it did contribute. Now everyone can make those styles. It's not the same as wine where, unless you go out and buy the grapes that actually grow elsewhere and then make your wine, you know, in a different place.
But yeah, climate has such an important part of that. Because, you know, like 150 years ago in England, the climate was very warm and they were making wine there. And now it's kind of come around again where they're making wine in England again.
Yeah, now they say, yeah, soon that they could have really good, in the next 100 years, have really good vineyards in England.
probably in Alaska as well.
Yeah. I always think it's the people that really have a lot to do with it. And I had a theory about why Belgium was the kind of, you know, beer capital of the world.
Because they hated the French?
I think the French influence from the artistic perspective and the German influence from the more scientific perspective, having both of those influences, really, you know, when a brewer is an artist first and a scientist second, or a scientist first and an artist second, whichever way you decide, that's a nice conflux in that area. And obviously you get, like, with wine is obviously, it's a little bit more of an art than a science.
But then again, in France, in the north of France, there's a huge brewing culture up there, like close to the border of Belgium and stuff. And lots of great beer is being brewed up there.
Excellent beer, yeah.
And that's one place, actually, where the specific malts they use in French beer, they give a lot of those beer de garde in the north of France a very characteristic flavor and aroma that you can't get out of German or American malts. It's very unique. That's right. It's not just the yeast that's contributing to the flavor. It's they have a certain, there's just a certain very earthy quality that also comes from the malts that are grown locally.
BR, top five brands that Shelton Brothers makes.
If we had don't do this to me, Jimmy.
I'm gonna let Hagen.
There's
do
too many.
Hagen,
Tuatara.
Obviously, Tuatara number
one. We
start
our own first level of breweries. Hagen, because you're doing I Taste Your Beer. Give us your top five.
Oh, man, my top five right now
Shelton beers.
Shelton beers.
Any beers.
I was talking with BR actually earlier this week. We had a conversation about putting some of the beers on the website, perhaps. And I was reading down that list, and man, I could not find for the life of me a beer that I had tried or noticed. There are some really interesting beers there.
Obscure, weird shit.
Oh, just for the names. Just really exciting.
Shelton Brothers.
Yeah, but check out Shelton Brothers' website and just click that drop-down menu. The drop-down menu is probably six screens long with all of the different beers that they carry. So
SheltonBrothers.com.
Yeah, if you're trying to tell me, oh, well, Shelton Brothers, which Shelton Brothers beer do you like the best? I don't know. Throw some consonants together and you'll probably get one.
What's the worst beer that they bring in?
Here's one that you never heard of. The Handbrugerit. It's the Norwegian beer.
Norwegian,
yeah, they're
yeah.
from Norway.
Yeah, yeah. Hand brewery. The hand, I always call them the hand brewery.
Yeah, the hand. It means the hand brewery.
Norwegian wood.
That's why their logo is like a handprint.
From Denmark, we had Norbros, and we had Solgard, and we had Amager. Some really cool stuff. Amager, that's how you say it. A-M-A-G-E-R.
Hamburger beer?
Yeah, a porter.
And, it was great, though, when we were out. This is what we first brought in, the Tuatara beers, this spring, and I met Carl, the brewer, out in Chicago at the Craft Brewers Conference. But at the same time, we had some of the Scandinavian brewers there, the guys from Amager, as well as Mikkel from Mikkeller. So it's kind of a confluence of the Kiwis and the Vikings from up north. It was rather interesting. There was one night at a bar. It was very, very international, but rather fun. But yeah, the Tuatara beers now are available. We just brought them into New York. We've got four of them, the Pilsner, the IPA, the Ardennes Golden Ale, and also the Munich Helles.
Are they the best five beers?
I know
beers?
That they're available at DBA.
They are. They absolutely are.
At any other bars they're available at right now, BR?
Yeah, but I
can't remember.
Off the top of my
are
head.
They available at Jimmy's number 43?
Not
certainly
yet.
Should be.
Maybe this week.
I had a couple of nice Tuatara beers down with Paulie at the Blue Nelson on Friday night. So
well, that's wow, a, that's yeah, a New
really?
Zealand bar. Yeah.
Right. Of course, he's
it's in the South Street.
He's one of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah,
I've known him for
nice
quite
guy.
A while.
Yeah.
All right,
well,
we're a lot of fun here. Ray, tell us something new and interesting about your life because you got so much going on. Come on,
my life is it's so good to be me, Jimmy. It's so good to be Ray Dieter.
People walk down the street and they say, "Gosh, I wish I owned a bar like you." I bet that happens to you all the time.
Or three.
No, I was watching. You know, I was watching football today. The Giants lost. The Saints lost. I know that's not beer conversation, but everybody was drinking beer while they were watching it, drinking the Abita beer, which you know is from New Orleans. Whatever. Yeah, everything's fine. Just like doing my sidewalk act.
Well, there's something we can control. We can't control whether someone's going to pay for us to go to San Diego or New Zealand or Montreal, but we're going to be hosting a party February 8th at DBA. It's our 50th show. The Beer Searches Radio will be 50 shows in.
And 50
we
weeks
a great
old.
Party. We get beer and entertainment and a chance to meet many of our guests that have been on the show will be at this event.
Should we get some music, you think?
I think so.
Some live music?
I think you at the New Orleans thing. You know, we'll do some.
I'm going to work on that.
Surely it's an Oompa band. Come on.
An Oompa band from New Zealand?
Oompa Loompas.
A Kiwi
Jazz.
Oompa band?
Oompa band.
And it's almost Christmas, but Good Beer Seal bars are gearing up for 2011, and the details for each bar's New Year's Eve celebrations are going to be on goodbeerseal.com. Sunswick will be celebrating its fifth anniversary on December 22nd, and the Diamond is now offering weekend movies. Quick programming note, Beer Sessions Radio will be taking a break next week, but we'll be back on Tuesday, January 4th. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can also find Beer Sessions Radio on Facebook. Friend us, share beer thoughts, and talk about tonight's episode with other listeners. On the Heritage Radio Network, I'm Jimmy Carboni. And thanks to Brie O'Connor and Jack Kinsey, the producers. Have a good night.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye.
I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.